You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, let's dive into today's chapter. So again, this is a little bit of a shorter chapter. We had a short one last week as well, but next week's is huge.
Matt, you say every chapter is short.
No, that's not true.
Like, we could put it on a t-shirt.
Maybe. But it's just
Sir Matt on the front, on the back, and it says short chapter this week.
Well, when we hit Dance of Dragons, then I feel like every chapter is huge, right?
I'll tell you what, I will say this. I thought that this chapter felt extremely fast-paced. More fast-paced than I remembered it being. Like, a lot kind of happens in a short amount of time. They're moving.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely a lot. There's definitely a lot for us to break down. So let's dive into today's chapter, which is Sansa 4. And so this is the pre-Purple Wedding, by the way. I mean, that comes fast, really. Like, we're just getting over the Red Wedding, and now, boom, Purple Wedding hits. That's just George. Just knows what he's doing, man. Just like, oh, everything's dire. Nope. Now the Lannisters are flipped on their heads.
Yes.
So Sansa has learned from Tyrion the fate of her brother and mother at the Red Wedding. She and her husband joined many other guests at the Queen's Ballroom to give Joffrey his wedding gifts. It is a new year, the 300th since Aegon's conquest, and Joffrey's wedding is that night. Tyrion presents his nephew with a copy of Grand Maester's Keith's Lives of Four Kings, one of only four copies in existence. Kevin tells the king it is a book every king should read. Joffrey is disappointed with the gift and hacks the book in half with a Valyrian sword his grandfather had just given him. Joffrey remarks that he is no stranger to Valyrian steel, and also that Tyrion owes him another gift. Tyrion suggests a Valyrian dagger with a dragonbone hilt, which seems to unsettle Joffrey for a moment before he says it is a good idea, but wants one with a gold hilt instead. Later, back in the room, Sansa tells Tyrion that she would rather not know how Robb and her mother had perished, and Tyrion promises that he will say no more. So, one of the things I actually took away from this, now, I mean, this is a Sansa chapter, but again, this is part of this, like, Sansa and Tyrion for A Storm of Swords, right? They're in kind of a, you know, each other's chapters and stuff like that. So I think what George immediately does is we just got it from Tyrion. He was nervous to tell her. He feels like she doesn't love him and everything, but one of the things I thought more about this was kind of from Tyrion's point of view, and that is the dagger. And it's something that I think, because of the Purple Wedding, he didn't get to really fully explore the idea of, like, oh, Joffrey perhaps was the one who was trying to take care of Bran.
Would love to see this from Tyrion's POV.
Exactly. And we don't know if that dagger is ever going to come back up to be another important piece. Now, obviously, in the show, it kind of came full circle. They gave it to Arya. Arya kills the Night King. Bran might get it again. We don't know, but the dagger is still something that I think is going to play an important role. And then, thanks to House of the Dragon, they added even more context to it, right? With it actually containing the ice and fire prophecy, right? It's like, was that just something they did for fun? Is that something that is actually embedded on there? And if that is the case, is that going to come full circle in the books? And maybe John will use the dagger, or Bran will use the dagger. We don't know.
It definitely feels like this dagger is, you know, kind of Chekhov's gun, right? It's going to end up being used, I think, in the story. It's going to have a pretty big moment. There's a lot going on in this chapter, ironically, for Tyrion from the Sansa POV, least of which is Tyrion and Sansa having their real first moment of almost possibly understanding each other's strife. I think Tyrion actually shows a lot of empathy in this chapter. And I think Sansa, despite all of her distrust, which is rightfully earned, she kind of is like, well, what angle could this be? Like, why would he be so gentle in this moment? And then at the end where he says, you know, I know all of nightmares as well, really feels like there's a dark, unfortunate connection between the two, and they understand each other for the first time, maybe a little bit better. But the dagger was the thing I took away from this, because think about it. Like you said, we just got through the Red Wedding. We're thinking about, how did we get here? Well, that dagger could very well be considered one of the biggest catalysts for all of these events, right? And Tyrion is still thinking about that as he thinks about what's happened to Robb and Catelyn Stark. And what a callback. That's a deep callback at this point in the series to go back. It might seem like it hasn't been that far, but you know, it's taken us, 4 years to get through 3 books. It's a lot of pages to call back to that original event, which was kind of like at least one of the catalysts for this. So I like that.
Well, and I think, too, it's one of those things that just gets lost in the shuffle where It's like, because if the Purple Wedding doesn't take place, then Tyrion is going to begin putting the pieces together and trying to figure out what's going on. And then he would use that information going forward somehow and use it to his advantage, but he doesn't get the chance to.
Yes.
Right. And I think that that's really what happens here. I mean, obviously, Tyrion and Sansa are both going to go in different directions here in a minute. But you can see those plans are like something Tyrion is going to begin using that. And I actually did like how they were at least somewhat like friendly towards each other when they finally kind of reunited at the end of Game of Thrones. And I think they probably will.
I was going to ask, do you think they meet again?
I think they meet again. I don't think they're going to, you know, keep their marriage or anything like that. It's actually kind of unfortunate because, man, they could have became, like, if you want to play the what if game, they could have became like a power couple. Cause I don't think they ever would have loved each other like in public, but I think they would have became like a political power. I think they would have like become friends with each other, because I think Tyrion would just, you know, she doesn't want anything to do with me, and she would just be fine with him probably like whoring around and doing whatever. And she could probably
don't touch me.
And she could do the same, but they would definitely be able to, because I think eventually, if like this doesn't happen, Tyrion would begin to go after some of her enemies, especially like if they went to Winterfell, then who knows what could happen. I mean, then she's away from it all and everything. And I think Tyrion would respect the Starks and things like that. He would have the rougher time in Winterfell because everyone would just listen to her.
Yeah, I think that a Stark and a Lannister being together at all in this geopolitical climate is a power couple, but the big
not in King's Landing.
Well, I was about to say the difference between someone like a Joffrey Lannister and a Tyrion Lannister is the fact that Tyrion would understand that Sansa is just as important as he is, whereas Joffrey doesn't see it like that. He doesn't respect the North. He doesn't know anything about the North. Tyrion has been there. He's been to the Wall, which I think is actually one of the most underrated pieces of Tyrion's arc, is the fact that he had that experience and he wanted that experience. And I do think it gives him like a bigger worldview than a lot of the other people in King's Landing, including his sister.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be another fun what if to explore. Like, what if Robert hadn't died and Sansa and Joffrey had just gotten married? Like, you know, where would they go? Would they just stay in King's Landing? Would they go to Storm's End?
I don't know.
I guess they would go to Dragonstone, because that's where he sent Stannis.
And Stannis is MIA at this point.
Like, Joffrey and Sansa at Dragonstone sounds utterly miserable for Sansa, because Joffrey would utterly hate it there.
Yeah, there's not much to do,
and he would just absolutely hate it there.
Yeah, that I don't think that would have been good for anybody. To pivot to back to last week, by the way, you remember me and you were talking, like, does Shay know at this moment? Like, when, right. like, or I'm sorry, does we went all the way down to, does Varys know about Shay and Tywin? Which, you know, whatever, we can always go back to that. But we were wondering at this point, is Shay sleeping with Tywin?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I could be wrong. I think last week I said I think that she might have been, because she changed her attitude towards, like, she wasn't as worried. I disagree with myself after reading this chapter, because she is clearly jealous of Sansa, and that her cash cow and Tyrion is at threat with this new girl. And I think if she had been sleeping with Tywin at this point in the story, it is my belief that she wouldn't really care about Sansa and Tyrion and being married, because she still has a securement with Tywin for the month. I mean, assuming that that's what she's after, status and money. She seems very territorial about Sansa in this chapter where they first kind of interact, which is, you know, knowing what we know, is very awkward. Sansa doesn't quite know. But I actually think that at this point that Shay has not been with Tywin, and I am now leaning more towards it all happened during the trial, like him, you know, bringing her in.
Manipulating her and everything.
Yeah, that's where I'm at now. I'm actually going to go against myself from last week.
Hey.
Yeah, I just got that feeling from this chapter. I don't know if you had any thoughts about it or not.
No, that could definitely be the case. We need to pay more attention when we get to it in a couple of weeks, and we get to that chapter to kind of really dive into Shay's things, because it's. But I don't know, man. Last week, you know, when we were looking at that stuff, I think she's a little, something seemed off.
She's a little looser.
Yeah, a little looser. But yeah. That's probably an accurate statement. So,
oh my god, I wasn't even trying to make that.
I know. Anyway, here, okay. Let's pull up some quotes from this week's chapter as well. So, that was such a sweet dream, Sansa thought drowsily. She had been back in Winterfell, running through the Godswood with her lady. Her father had been there. Her brothers, all of them warm and safe. If only dreaming could make it so. She threw back the covers. I must be brave. Her torments would soon be ended, one way or the other. If Lady was here, I would not be afraid. Lady was dead, though. Rob, Bran, Rickon, Arya, her father, her mother, even Septa Mordaine. All of them are dead but me. She was alone in the world now. Her lord husband was not beside her, but she was used to that. Tyrion was a bad sleeper and often rose before the dawn. Usually she found him in the solar, hunched beside a candle, lost in some old scroll or leather-bound book. Sometimes the smell of the morning bread from the ovens took him to the kitchens, and sometimes he would climb up to the roof garden or wander all alone down the traitor's walk. Then it kind of gets a little interesting here. She threw back the shutters and shivered at the goose prickles rose along her arms, goosebumps, you know, really. There were clouds massing in the eastern sky, pierced by shafts of sunlight. They were like two huge castles afloat in the morning sky. Sansa could see their walls of tumbled stone, their mighty keeps. Wispy banners swirled from atop their towers and reached for the fast fading stars. The sun was coming up behind them, and she watched them go from black to gray to a thousand shades of rose and gold and crimson. Soon the wind mushed them together, and there was only one castle where there had been two. She heard the door open as her maids brought the hot water for her bath. They were both new to her service. Tyrion had said the woman who tended to her previously had all been Cersei's spies, just as Sansa had always suspected. She said, come see them. There's castles in the sky. They came to have a look. It's made of gold. Shay had a short, you know, she's talking about Shay, a castle of gold. There's a sight I'd like to see. A castle, is it? Brella had to squint. The tower's tumbling over, looks like. It's all ruins, that is. Sansa did not want to hear about falling towers and ruined castles. So kind of a lot there in that. So, you know, we think about like the girl in the snow kicking over the towers. She doesn't want to hear about that, right? Like that's kind of a slight little foreshadowing towards that. But if you look at it too, she's like, oh, hey, there's two huge castles afloat in the morning sky. She can see them. And then they essentially you know, she's talking about them being black and gray and then shades of rose and gold and crimson, right? I mean, so like you think black and gray towers, that could be Winterfell, and now they both fall just like Winterfell, you know, in her eyes or her parents or whatever. And then it goes from shades of rose and gold, which could be the Tyrells, right? She thought she was going to get married to a Tyrell, and then crimson, which could be like Tyrion, and then it all gets mushed together and everything, you know, falls apart.
Yeah, it all ends up kind of coming together. You know, two things in the high in the sky made me think of the Vale.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bit of foreshadowing, possibly maybe that she would go there. It's a kind of a reach,
yeah,
but
I didn't know. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And also the fact that
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Like, it's kind of all these things coming together and like morphing into something else, like change, and she changes when she goes to the Vale. I guess I can bring it up now, but I was going to wait until we maybe read that part. But so I thought that was foreshadowing for Sansa's future, and I actually think Tyrion's future is foreshadowed in this chapter as well. They're talking about the Targaryen kings. I'm talking about Baelor the Blessed, everything. Which, by the way, I love whenever the lore is just interjected into the chapter. But Tyrion says, two wives and three dragons, what else could you want? Or something like that. And ironically, he's now on his second wife. So the only thing he has, like, what else could you want, is three dragons. He's going to have three dragons when he meets Dany.
Yeah.
Pretty cool, right? Like, he's actually, and again, we talked last week about, and plenty of times before, all the dragon symbolism surrounding Tyrion, and then eventually he's going to find his way to Dany over the Narrow Sea. But yeah, two wives and three dragons. What else could you ask for? Tyrion has had two wives, and now the next step is getting his three dragons. Pretty cool.
Yeah. There's also a little bit of color foreshadowing here too, as you skip ahead. So this is like when Pod is there. Sansa had been wary of Tyrion's squire at first. He was a Payne, cousin to Sir Ilyn Payne, who had taken her father's head off. However, she'd soon come to realize that Pod was as frightened of her as she was of his cousin. Whenever she spoke to him, he turned the most alarming shade of red. He says, "Are purple, gold, and white the colors of House Payne, Podrick?" she asked him politely. "No, I mean, yes," he blushed. "The colors. Our arms are purple and white, cheeky, my lady, with gold coins in the cheeks. Purple and white both." He studied her feet. "There's a tale behind those coins," said Tyrion. "No doubt Pod will confide in you, in your toes one day, just now as we are expected at the Queen's ballroom, however, shall we?" And then they, you know, are going to go there. Sansa was tempted to tell him to beg off. "I could tell that my tummy was upset, or that's my moon's blood had come." She wanted nothing more than to crawl back into bed and pull up the drapes. "I must be brave, like Rob," she told herself, and she took her lord husband stiffly by the arm.
Yeah, I don't think she would have got out of that with her moon's blood excuse. I think she's wishful thinking here. I think they would have dragged her there no matter what. Joffrey would have had her there, because part of this fun for him is the embarrassment of her.
Yeah. So let's continue on a little bit here. So some of the stuff, you know, like we talked about, he gets the Valyrian steel sword, you know, and Sansa's remembering the sword of Lion's Tooth that Arya had flung into the Trident. The guests were shouting out names for the new blade, and then he ultimately decides on Widow's Wail, which is some that somebody shouted. "Yes, I shall make many a widow too," he slashed again. "And when I face my uncle Stannis, it will break his magic sword clean in two." Joffrey tried a down cut, forcing Sir Balin Swan to take a hasty step backward. Laughter rang through the halls, and the look on Balin's face.
Everyone knows this kid's a psychopath. And then to choose the name Widow's Wail is obviously very on the nose, but psychopathic just like he is. So it kind of works.
Yeah. Okay. Then let's go here, which is just a little bit further. So perhaps, so this is when he's talking about the sword and he cuts the book in half. Tyrion was staring at his nephew with his mismatched eyes. Perhaps a knife, sire, to match your sword, a dagger of the same fine Valyrian steel with a dragon bone hilt, say. Joffrey gave him a sharp look. Yes, a dagger to match my sword. Good. He nodded. A gold hilt with rubies in it. Dragon bone is too plain. So that's really kind of it on it, right? It's just this like tiny little bring up there, you know, but
you can feel it catches Joffrey a little off guard.
Sure.
And then he kind of dismisses it like, oh, dragon bone, that's too, like, I think that this is pretty good. Like, I think Joffrey's reaction, though very minute, is a bit telling. And let's not forget that also, I believe Jaime thinks that Joffrey did it as well to get Robert's approval. So there's two people think it's Joffrey. Now, George could be pulling a fast one on us and it could end up being Littlefinger, or I've seen some people speculate that it could be Mance Rayder, which I think is like one of the more interesting. Yeah, I would need to refresh myself on that theory. That was one I heard a long time ago. But I think that Joffrey is almost a little stutter stepped here. Right? He's like, dagger. Oh, like maybe he knows.
Yeah. Well, if you go back and you track the path of the dagger, right? Like Littlefinger gets it at one point, and then Tyrion has it. And then, you know, that's why she thinks that Tyrion is the one who did it. It would be like crazy if it was ultimately just Joffrey doing it because he's like, yeah, put the boy out of his misery, you know.
My dad would love this. Yeah.
Why would he at all believe that Robert Baratheon would think that was a good, like, there's Robert Baratheon would not like that whatsoever.
I don't think Robert would find that to be very cash money. I think he would.
Yeah. I mean, when would we ever believe that he would think like, oh, we should just put like kids out of their misery.
Well, he's a psychopath. Right. He thinks about living things in a much different way than we do.
Right. Yeah. It's just so bizarre. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I like it that it was ultimately just Joffrey doing it. Cause it's like, I mean, there's more to it if it's just like,
well, it's also going to be about how did Joffrey get it though. Let's be fair.
Right. And that we don't know that.
Could Littlefinger had somehow got it into his possession? But then you would have to, like, Littlefinger would have to have the foresight. The Bran would be that, you know what I'm saying? Like,
none of that stuff would have happened, I don't think, if Bran hadn't gotten injured.
Yeah, exactly. So it kind of has to be there and in the moment and what's available to Joffrey and that dagger being it.
Right.
It's probably Joffrey, to be honest. No,
I mean, it could have been Littlefinger. It could ultimately have been Littlefinger, you know, manipulating him into the situation to do it.
Possibly.
Because Littlefinger could say, oh, I could use this to my advantage to.
Yeah.
Cause a war between the Starks and the Lannisters. And then does it just get out of his control?
It feels like such.
Because ultimately his goal, his plan is to try to get Catelyn. That's his game plan. And then once it realizes that's not going to happen, that's when it begins to shift to Sansa.
All right. You want to get real tinfoily?
Sure.
What if the three-eyed raven sent the dagger?
You mean like through somebody?
Manipulated the whole thing. As it gives the war, gives Bran the excuse to stay back. That's how Bran gets up and the inevitability that he becomes. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know this.
I don't think you need that because Bran's fall is what ultimately causes him all that other stuff. The assassin is like totally separate.
Well, the assassin makes more of a necessity that everyone leaves after, like, because that kind of kicks off the whole problem, right, of the war. So
right now Catelyn they need leaves. To go and right because Ned wants to stay back and then
leaves him isolated
right and then Catelyn's like, no, we have to investigate what happened here.
I don't think this is the case. I just kind of wanted to play the what if game there, like,
right,
like, what if it was that? I'll be honest, I think it's Joffrey. I think it's kind of ironic that a child's misguided actions could cause such a ripple effect, but if you look at a lot of the ways wars start in history, a lot of it's really strange and almost seems like minor to blow up into something so large, and a lot of like coincidences too. World War One, for example, would probably be a decent example of this. There were some wars in the past started by people hunting the wrong seafaring animals at the wrong times. I mean, there's been a lot of really weird ways that like big conflicts start. So Joffrey doing this for the approval of his dad, which is kind of a dumb thing to do, could very well just be the truth.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll come on here a little bit. So there's some other things that do happen here a little bit. They run into Oberyn a little bit and have a few.
Just
a quick little back and forth here. So you're right, when they talk about Baelor the Blessed, Prince Oberyn smiled. If you were a viper, my lady, would you want to bite a bloodless stick like Baelor the Blessed? I'd sooner save my fangs for someone juicier. My prince is playing with you, Lady Sansa, said the woman, Illyria Sand. The septims and singers like to say that the snakes did not bite Baelor, but the truth is very different. He was bitten 50 times, and he should have died from it. If he had, Viserys would have reigned 12 years, said Tyrion, and the Seven Kingdoms might have been better served. Some believe Baelor was deranged by all that venom. Yes, said Prince Oberyn, but I've seen no snakes in this Red Keep of yours, so how do you account for Joffrey? I prefer not to, Tyrion inclined his head stiffly. If you will excuse us, our litter awaits. Then they leave. And then also Tyrion does have the last little thought about this. He says, you know, I should have known better. I should have seen a good many things. Perhaps the dagger will please him more. When the dwarf grimaced, his scar tightened and twisted. The boy's earning himself a dagger, wouldn't you say? Thankfully, Tyrion did not wait for her to reply. Joff quarreled with your brother, Robert Winterfell. Tell me, were there ill feelings between Bran and his grace as well? Bran, the question confused her. Before he fell, you mean? He's thinking about it, and then that's kind of it. And then he asks her about, like, you know, if she wants to know how Rob died. She says no, and then he says, you know, I know very much about bad dreams.
Yes, and also thinking that she's getting ready. We have the hairnet. Everything's going to happen, and the accusal of Tyrion and Sansa. This is kind of a precursor in setting that up as well. The Oberyn stuff's very coded, talking about snakes and poisonous and everything else. Really leads well into what will become the Purple Wedding.
Yeah. I agree. So, yeah, so he is planning and scheming there, and he's thinking about it. So maybe the point of that is actually that Sansa begins to understand and try to put the pieces together about the dagger and Joffrey.
Here's a question.
And maybe that'll come up again in Winds of Winter with her and Littlefinger.
Yeah, absolutely. Think about this too. What if Joffrey is extra mean to Tyrion at his wedding because of the comment about the dagger? Like, he ruminated and was pissed off about it, and then went extra hard at his uncle at the wedding, which ultimately results in the scene that happened. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that possibly could be why Joffrey's even more of a piece of trash at his wedding than I think he comes off here. So
I don't really know that there's a whole lot Tyrion could do about it, though. Like, even if what's he going to do with that information once, you know, Joffrey's king and he's about to be married? And then
there's not, but I think that Joffrey just doesn't like to be messed with. Like, I think that he wants all of the power and all, like, he wants to be the one postured. And in that moment, I read it as Joffrey almost kind of slips up a little bit. Like, he's like, what? How does he know? And like, I don't want that dagger anyways. And then he goes back to his room and it's just like, I'm going to make sure he regrets this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like Joffrey can come out and be like, you know, he can't yell in front of everyone like, you found out about the dagger. He can't do that. So he has to internalize, which probably makes him even more angry because he's a very emotional kid. So,
well, hey, we'll find out about it next time, because that's where we're at. Purple Wedding. Wow. It just felt like we spent so long getting to the Red Wedding, and now we're already at the Purple Wedding.
Yeah, dude. It's because
it's like three chapters later. It's crazy. Let's
kill this kid.
Thank God. This is, you know, this is a lot of people's favorite episode of Game of Thrones, a lot of people's favorite moment in the books. This is the one, this one you've been waiting for, finally.
It's so good, dude.
That little bastard, he's going to get his own. So that's where we will be at next time. So as always, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 60, Tyrion 8.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee podcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.